Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show, summer special. For the next 2 weeks, coming at you daily with the climax of the Champions and Europa League's 28 teams, two cups. Today, Europa League last 16, Man United through, Inter get tough with Getafe, Basaksehir here, no longer here, and all the rest of the first day's verdicts. We'll also have the latest on transfers and look ahead to the weekend's Champions League action and much more in this Totally Football Show summer special in association with Paddy Power. Hey listener, thanks for joining us. Hope you're feeling summery. I know I am, after a busy night of Europa League action in the company of Alvaro Romeo. Hola, Alvaro.
Hola.
And James Horncastle too.
Hello. Alvaro is in Greece. I was wondering, I'm so ignorant. How do you say hello or good evening in Greek?
Kalispera.
Very good, James. Did you say Ella and Kalispera?
There you go.
Ella is hello. Kalispera is good afternoon.
Good. Or Kalinikta for, you know, the end of the day. We'll move on, listener, right? Did you know, Alvaro and James, that the last 8 Europa Leagues have been won by either an English or a Spanish club?
I feel like I did know that because Germany hasn't had a winner since Schalke's Eurofighters in, what, the mid-90s, where Roy Hodgson annoyed Javier Zanetti, which is practically impossible to do. And Italy hasn't had a winner since Parma in 1999.
And yeah, and France is still looking for a champion. I believe that they have never won the UEFA Cup or the Europa League.
I enjoy that you said that whilst Julien Laurens is off. Let's really make a lot of about that. What, France have only had one European Cup winner, which was Marseille back in the day.
Back in the day. And, you know, we all know what asterisks might go alongside that achievement. Among Italy's past winners, of course, are Inter, which is handy because they're in action this evening. Are they potential winners this time around? Well, we've just seen them beating Getafe 2-0 in Gelsenkirchen. Alvaro, as someone who doesn't see the Nerazzurri quite as much as Mr. Horncastle there, what did you make of Antonio Conte's team?
Well, I think that they were very impressive again, playing from the back. The three men centre-back is working perfectly for them. Then I believe that they could match Getafe's intensity, which I'm not surprised on an Antonio Conte's team. And up front, they've got much more firepower than any other team in the Europa League. Maybe Manchester United is the only one with so much talent. Lautaro, Lukaku, Christian Eriksen came in the second half. That tells you a lot about the depth in Inter Milan. And I was very positively impressed by Inter Milan. It's no coincidence that they have collected more than 80 points in Serie A.
Right. And Sanchez are being added on a permanent basis to that firepower up front as of tomorrow. Is that right, James?
Yeah, expected to be made official tomorrow morning. Still seeking to understand whether there is some kind of a settlement between United and Alexis, because as far as I understand it, Inter will not be taking on all of his wages. They'll be paying him €7 million a year for the next 3 years, which is around about half what he was getting paid per season at Old Trafford. But yeah, just to pick up on what Alvaro was saying, Sanchez, who had a really good end to the season for Inter, was involved in 10 goals in his last 12 games. He came off the bench in this one too. So, you know, for all Conte complains that this squad doesn't have depth, when he can call upon Eriksen to come off the bench and score and Sanchez to come off the bench too, I think, again, it does kind of reinforce this belief that at least on paper, Inter should be a contender for this and should, being on the side of the draw that they're at, reach the final.
Lukaku scoring his 30th of the season after a slightly nervy first half for the Nerazzurri. And then Christian Eriksen, only about 60 seconds after coming on in the second half, making it 2-0. Getafe, the team who had knocked out Ajax previously, Alvaro, but they've kind of lost their way since then. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that the lockdown didn't have any positive effect on Getafe because they were in a great run, and that was something that it was very fragile because Getafe doesn't have a big squad, and I believe that all the players were giving their best, and suddenly you chop that off and you come back in June And you are on the same team. You are the team that you should be, according to the quality of your players. And since the lockdown in the league, Getafe won only one league game out of 11. And they played very well against the big teams, surprisingly, like, for example, against Real Madrid. And I think that Bordalas today wanted to make a similar tactic to what he did to Real Madrid, playing with five midfielders. And that worked for 30 minutes until Romelu Lukaku had his favorite possible action in front of him.
È partito Lukaku, la palla per lui, attenzione a Lukaku. Le lascia sfilare, va contro Akshayta, duellare in area di rigore! Lukaku gira e trova il gol del 1-0. Sono 30 in stagione per Romelu Lukaku. Alla prima palla buona, non sbaglia.
In front of a light defender like Akshayta, marking him laterally, Lukaku scored, and from that moment Getafe tried really hard. In fact, they had a penalty in the second half. But Jorge Molina failed in a spectacular fashion, I will say, for a man of his age as well, because he's needing the 40 years old. And after that, Inter, when they scored the second goal, it was pretty much game over for Getafe. But anyway, it's been a great season for Bordalas, man. And I believe that if they can build up from this and learn from these mistakes, next season they will be competitive again.
All right. As for Inter, who did Antonio Conte complain about after the final whistle, James?
Well, he hasn't appeared in front of the cameras yet, James, so still waiting to find out. But he did walk his comments back from the weekend.
Right. A rather yesterday. Delicate build-up to this game, but with some suggestions that he'd gone far enough to even jeopardise his future with the club after his comments, as you say, from the weekend.
Yes, and he put out a statement to one of the Italian news wires yesterday saying that, look, I've got a 3-year contract. I'm not going to stop until we're successful here, and success means winning something. He had a conversation, I'm led to believe, with the president, Stephen Zhang, who's still in his 20s, still in China, as Conte pointed out, at the weekend after the win against Atalanta in Bergamo. So we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I was, you know, after the first 20 minutes, it looked awkward for Inter. I didn't think they played well. I thought Handanovic kept them in the game up to that point. You know, I was already thinking, if Inter go out tonight, what are the repercussions going to be? Are they going to have this big get-together, this big crisis meeting? Because Conte certainly hasn't given the impression that he is happy and satisfied with the way things have been going at Inter, despite them having the best points tally since the treble, finishing second, something that they haven't done since 2011, doing a lot of really good things, you know, having the best defence in the league, having lost fewer games than anyone in Serie A. But we'll have to see. I think, obviously, that's been postponed by tonight's win, and we'll have to see what happens in the remainder of this competition and whether they win it, because Inter have a great history in this competition, and it'd be good if an Italian side could end that long drought that we were talking about earlier.
Well, they'll be facing, in the last eight then, the team that goes through from the Bayer Leverkusen-Rangers tie. Leverkusen, of course, 3-1 up from the first leg of that in Glasgow way back in March.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Also on Wednesday, Man United squeaked past LASK of Linz. 7-1 on aggregate. Of course, it was 5-0 from the away leg, and 2-1 on the night at Old Trafford with a sensational opening goal from the visitors, courtesy of Weisinger, who also had a part to play in Man United's equaliser, which was Jesse Lingard. Laurie Whitwell, who was actually there and watching all of this, joins us now on the line. Hi, Laurie.
Hi, guys. Okay.
Yeah, very well. So, how was this performance from Man United in terms of getting them ready for the last eight?
I think it was a case of getting some of the fringe players involved who obviously haven't been playing in the Premier League, with Solskjaer, you know, using his full strength side as they chase that Champions League play. So getting a few players like that, so Fred, Scott McTominay, Jesse Lingard again, Juan Mata, Odinogalo, getting those guys a few games. Harry Maguire played again. I think his 59th game of the season. I think he's one of those players that just demands to play every game. Solskjaer mentioned before the game that he's got a few players that are sort of chewing his ear off trying to get on. So in that regard, I think it was a fair enough way for players to get a bit bit of minutes in their legs. Perhaps a surprise that not more younger players play, but Tedder Mengi came on for his debut, 18-year-old defender, first time that he's played for United, and that's the eighth academy player that Solskjaer's given a debut to this season, which is the most since the Busby Babes. So yeah, I think it was kind of, it worked. It was a bit of a stilted performance, but you know, ultimately they kind of clicked and won the tie, and I think it's fair enough that now he'll bring in his A-listers, I suppose, for Monday's game against Copenhagen.
That Jesse Lingard goal, has that been credited to him or is an own goal now?
I would give that to Lingard. I mean, I know that he's dallied quite a lot, and I know he's talking about more confidence that he's got since that, you know, not since, but that goal at Leicester's helped him with a bit of confidence, and but he still seemed to dally with it. It was a good ball from Mata, had a lot of time to think about it, and he seemed to take a while, but I think he got his shot away just in time before the defender came across and got the nick. So I don't know, I'm more inclined to give that to Lingard than an own goal.
Okay, in which case that's two now. In two for him. What a way to finish off his United career, if that indeed is what's happening. How well do you think Man United are set? How much do you think they're going to do justice to their status as favourites for this competition?
I think they're decent. I mean, funnily enough, after the game, the sort of the first team squad pretty much came out and did like a session, which is not unusual, I suppose, but it was quite an intense session and quite a lot of shooting involved. And so you had McKenna playing with Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Ethan Laird on the right, and then Michael Carrick setting up Rashford, Martial, Bruno in the middle for sort of shots. So clearly they're thinking, right, let's get these guys out there again, let's get them, you know, get the blood pumping ahead of Monday's game. So I think that'll be a case that they're sort of in decent nick. They're clearly not, you know, too fatigued from all those games in quick succession. I know some of the performances probably did underwhelm towards the end of the season, but I don't know, I feel like they've got enough energy in their legs for, you know, three games if they are to make the final in 11 days in Germany. So I think they should really, I mean, Copenhagen, they're a fairly you know, average side really for this stage of the Europa League, first time in the quarterfinals in Europe, so really United should be dismissing them fairly straightforwardly if I'm not sort of counting my chickens too much. Obviously the semi-final will be a bit more difficult, and then, you know, the final could be against Inter, couldn't it, with you know, potentially Alexis Sanchez now he's made his move permanent. So yeah, I suppose that's probably the only thing, you know, if you look at those teams, that they could provide a bit of an issue, but you know, certainly semi-finals at least for United.
Right, could be Wolves in the semi, could be Inter in the final. What an exciting tournament awaits. Laurie, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and speak to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, see you later.
Laurie Whitwell, who was watching that game of course for The Athletic, describing Copenhagen as an average team. Is that fair? Could they be a stumbling block for United in a one-off tie? Ask Luke Williams, who says they looked impressive on the break tonight, referring to their 3-0 victory on Wednesday evening over the Turkish, newly crowned Turkish champions, Başakşehir. A couple of goals from Jonas Wind, and then Falke with the other one. Of course, Copenhagen also put out Celtic in the previous round, didn't they? That's my Copenhagen knowledge.
Yes, and they were very impressive today. Wind was excellent. He not only scored the brace, but also he gave a very precious assist for Falk in the last goal of the game. And I think that they ran over Istanbul very clearly, very clearly. And from the first minute of the game, they started just putting a lot of pressure on the opponent. And the first goal is a real joy to watch as well, switching the game from left to right, a great cross from the right and an excellent header from Bind. So I think that they are going to be dangerous. They've got definitely a lot of passion. I don't know if that means anything, but they are the first team from the Danish capital that are through to a European quarterfinal. And I guess that they will be pumped up because they've never been so far away in a European competition. So why not? They've got nothing to lose against Manchester United.
They've got a Norwegian manager, of course, Ståle Solbakken, who just happened to be their manager also 14 years ago when they beat Man United in the Champions League group stages. Of course, it's an all-Norwegian gaffer derby, this one, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well. So that's nice.
And am I right in thinking he could play against Wolves as well, a team he coached, as if I'm not mistaken?
Of course. So,
but yeah, Copenhagen actually a very quietly well-run club. I know that, yeah, certainly in the English language media, we've got a little bit Excited about Midtjylland and how they're run and the kind of synergy that they have with Brentford. But Copenhagen's sporting director has been poached by Villa. And if you look at some of the players that they've had over the years, which have gone on to essentially play for teams in the sort of lower echelons of the top five leagues, that's still pretty impressive. So, look, on paper, United should win this game. But, I think for Copenhagen to get to a quarterfinal of this competition, it does feel like it has been coming, I would say, for a while.
Very interesting. Well, also on Wednesday, Shakhtar Donetsk, always dark horses for any competition that they're in ever, maintain that status as they dispatch Wolfsburg to qualify for the last eight at the Olympic Stadium in Kiev. It was a goalless for 89 minutes, and then the host scored three in about as many minutes and left Wolfsburg looking very sheepish. They will be facing either Basel or Frankfurt. Julian Moraes, by the way, with two goals in that game. He's now up to 25 for the season.
This Friday night, two bitter rivals finally meet. A grudge match that's been months in the making. It started in the boardroom, then went to the courtroom. It's Man City in the Champions League.
Yep, Man City are back in Europe, but here's a ruling that'll please all fans. Paddy Power have decided to give new and existing customers a £5 free bet on Friday's game versus Real Madrid. That's right, a £5 free bet on Man City v Real this Friday. Paddy Power. T's and C's apply. Online exclusive. New customers must deposit. One free £5 bet per customer. Opt-in required. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Summer Special by The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Elsewhere in football, listener, big congratulations to Fulham and people who like a pleasant walk through Bishop's Park, because Tuesday night they sealed their place back in the Premier League with a 2-1 win over Brentford in the playoff final. Duncan Alexander points out that in each of Fulham's last two seasons in the Premier League, they've gone through three different managers and had the worst defence in the division and finished 19th. That's quite a remarkable run they're on. Anyway, there's a new Totally Football League show all about that. So have a look for that. And they can entertain you with their thoughts on that. Itself less than an entertaining game, but momentous event for Fulham and Scott Parker. Elsewhere in football news, we hear that Iker Casillas has retired, which kind of happened, Alvaro, I feel, last year, no, when he had that heart attack.
Yeah, but he never announced his retirement. Unfortunately for him, he didn't finish his career playing football, which is what a player of his caliber deserved. Because he's been 22 years as a pro, he has played more than 1,000 players as a professional as well, and he's got few records under his belt. For example, in the international level, he has kept 102 clean sheets, which is a record too. And I have to say that I was very lucky to witness his first ever game in the top flight, because he played in San Mamés in Bilbao against Athletic. And that day he didn't play particularly well. The reason why he played is because Real Madrid had no goalkeepers left in the squad, and the goalkeeper who was on the bench that day, Albano Bizarri, wasn't of the liking of John Benjamin Tosak. And his career has been phenomenal. Real Madrid has said in the statement that Iker Casillas was the club's best ever goalkeeper. And in 16 years, he won everything. 5 La Liga titles, 3 Champions League. Then he won in the international level with the Spanish national team everything, being the captain as well. And the only sad thing about Iker Casillas and Real Madrid is that he never left Real Madrid the way he would have wanted. I remember that he gave a statement in 2015 on his own. It's like the players and the club itself didn't endorse him the day he said goodbye. And that was a real shame, because he should have received the kind of farewell from Real Madrid that a player of this caliber deserved.
Was he not rather frozen out by Jose Mourinho, who, I know it's not like Jose, but didn't Jose identify him as the mole in the dressing room?
Yes, I think that Jose Mourinho hinted in a way that Iker Casillas was the mole, that he was leaking information to his girlfriend, who was a reporter as well, Sara Carbonero. And part of the ultras went against him, shouting at him during the games, partly because of his performances that weren't as good as they were in the past, partly because of his friendship with Xavi Hernández, a player of Barcelona. And, Mourinho basically didn't like that Iker Casillas put the interest of the Spanish national team over the interest of what he thought it was the interest of Real Madrid. And that's why his last years at Real Madrid weren't good, then he lost the position to Keylor Navas as well. And yeah, it's a real shame that he left Real Madrid like that, but he will be remembered as a legend.
Right, and better relations now, I believe, between him and the club. Alvaro, let's quickly get your verdicts on a couple of transfer figures. Ferran Torres, for a start, who's come to Man City, and I think 20.1 million, is that right, the figure? Is that a good figure for Man City? Doesn't sound a particularly good one for Valencia. And is it true that, like Ferran says, that he only left Valencia because they wouldn't give him the captain's armband, and he wanted it, and he's 20 years old?
I read an interview with Ferran Torres, and the first thing he said is that he didn't like Dani Parejo at all, the captain of Valencia. He said that he wasn't happy with the way he welcomed him, and that for the first like 2 or 3 months he didn't even say good morning to him. So he was very acid towards a Valencia legend as well, which was a little bit weird. And when it comes to the price tag, I mean, 25 million euro for a player of his youth is nothing for Manchester City. I think Valencia should have pushed for a better price, because normally these kind of players, currently, the way the market is, they should be worth 40 million or more. So I think that Valencia has done a terrible business. And if this signing is a flop for Manchester City because Ferran Torres doesn't live up to the expectations, at least they would have paid 25 million, which is a bargain anyway. It's a price that is definitely a price of 2015.
Do you think he'll be a flop?
I think that he's a player who has many things to polish, to improve his numbers, his statistics. But when it comes to playing for Pep Guardiola, I think that he can deliver what Guardiola is asking for, because he always plays next to the line. He is a decent dribbler, and he understands very well the positioning, the collective game. But I think that he has to improve his stats a lot, because he has never, for example, hit double figures. And obviously at Manchester City, if you don't hit double figures, or if you are not nowhere near there, the likes of Sterling or Mahrez, they are going to play ahead of you for sure.
Also on their way potentially from the Liga to the Premier League is Sergio Reguilón of Real Madrid, although I've not seen him much. Alvaro, have you? And is he a bit of a bargain at the supposed 20 million that they're looking
yes,
at paying?
As well. Yeah. And it's funny how the fourth team in La Liga, like Sevilla, cannot compete for a second financially with the fourth team in Premier League, which is Chelsea. If Chelsea makes an offer for Reguilón and Sevilla does another one, Chelsea is going to get the player, because they will pay more, and they will pay more money as well.
What will they be getting?
They will be getting a player with a lot of physicality. He loves to attack. He loves to attack. And I think that his defensive ability is quite decent as well. But maybe he should be more, let's say, he should capitalize more his attacking. I believe that his crossing can improve. But still, he's a young player, and at Real Madrid last season he was very impressive, and this season for Sevilla he's been probably the second best left-back in La Liga. So I believe that he's a very good player for that price, and he's definitely better than Marcos Alonso, especially in a four-man defence.
Well, from Reguilón to reggaeton now, actually, as Atalanta's highly musical goalkeeper Pierluigi Gollini, by night known as Glorious, check out his work on YouTube, may not be available for the absolutely huge and massive clash with Paris Saint-Germain that we're all looking forward to so much. That's on the 12th of August. He's not the only one either, because Ilicic, as we previously mentioned, won't be there. And now apparently it looks like Marco Verratti of Paris Saint-Germain, a player with his own checkered injury history, will also be paying forfeit.
Yeah, and also Mbappe involved in a race against time to get fit again after the injury he suffered in the Coupe de France final against Saint-Etienne. But I don't think Gollini is too big a loss for Atalanta, because they have got Marco Sportiello, who's a fairly good goalkeeper, has done pretty well when he's been called upon this season. But yeah, a bit of a blow for PSG to lose Verratti. And unfortunately, this has been a theme throughout his career. He's often missed, certainly for his country, major tournaments through injuries. He's missed big games through injuries as well. Yeah, it's a shame, really, that his body is in some respects fragile. He just seems to pull up. someone I love watching and someone who'd have been there to control the midfield in a very kind of busy environment with Atalanta getting up and in PSG's face, because that's what they'll do. They need players like Verratti, who, as our dear friend Raphael Honigstein likes to say in the most German fashion possible, players who are press resistant, who can beat the press. So missing a player like that will be a blow.
Well, the game coming up on the 12th of August, so we'll be looking at that in more focus as the days progress. Quick word on Man City Real. We see that Gareth Bale's NFI'd Alvaro. How are Real ahead of that game? And what do you think of their prospects briefly?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for them because they have to come back from a terrible score. But at the same time, the only doubt is whether Eden Hazard is going to be 100%, which doesn't seem like, and in which case, will Zinedine Zidane play Eden Hazard to the 80% of his capabilities, or will he play Vinicius Junior, for example, a player who on the left has been spectacular this season? And yeah, let's don't forget that one of the best scorers of Real Madrid, Sergio Ramos, won't be there, which is a terrible absentee for Real Madrid, because Eder Militao, a player with little experience, would be pairing up in the centre half position with Rafael Varane. So I think that is quite complicated for Real Madrid this time to come back.
That game coming up on Friday. On Thursday, there's more Europa League action. And we're going to be talking about that very shortly. We touch on Wolves, the very interesting-looking Sevilla-Roma game, and also the team who, 32 years ago, gave us one of this competition's greatest ever finals, Bayer Leverkusen.
You're listening to the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
1988. The continent was banging to the sound of Johnny Hates Jazz. English clubs were still serving their post-title European ban. The Europa League was still called the UEFA Cup. And Bayer, the team they call Leverkusen, were facing Espanyol in the UEFA Cup final. Espanyol, managed by Javier Clemente, had already knocked out both Trapattoni's Inter and Arrigo Sacchi's Milan. Bayer had put out Espanyol's little-known neighbours, Barcelona, but their next trip to Catalonia for this two-legged final wasn't to go as expected.
Va a intentar centrar, cuelga el balón, va a rematar, gol! Golazo!
Espanyol with a 3-0 win, one hand already on the cup. The second leg in Germany saw a potential Bayer comeback goal disallowed after the ball was headed out of goalkeeper Thomas Nkono's hands by Bayer's Brazilian star Cheetah, that's his name. So at halftime, they still trailed 3-0. Cue one of the competition's great comebacks.
Und Zoll. Und Tor! Ich werde verrückt! Schabum! 3-0!
1-2-3 goals to take it extra time, with Cheetah leading the comeback before Bayer took it on penalties. Never say Leverkusen again. Bayer have won precisely one Pokal since then, but been runners-up 5 times in the league, 3 times in the German Cup, and once in the Champions League to that goal in Glasgow. Shattered dreams indeed. Were your dreams shattered that night, Alvaro, when Bayer Leverkusen came back?
I felt very sorry for Javier Clemente, but Espanyol, obviously, never recover historically from that. I believe they've been talking about that for years and years and years. Javier Clemente just revamped that Espanyol the season before, finished third, and he came to the club after winning back-to-back titles, league titles, with Athletic de Bilbao. So Espanyol had probably the best Spanish manager at the time. But Javier Clemente was delivering. Basically, he took the team to the final. It was all ready to be won, and they collapsed in the second half of the second leg with big mistakes by Nkono first in first place, and then Bayer Leverkusen just ran the show. But somehow they managed to get to the penalties. And there is a very nice anecdote, because Javier Clemente didn't even prepare the penalties for that day. And when it came to the penalty shootout, he asked one of his star strikers, Losada, "Do you dare to take one?" And the player asking, what should I do? And Clemente said, just smash the ball, man. I mean, smash the ball. Don't care about anything else. And Losada just hit it so hard that he took it, according to Clemente's version, out of the ground. So Espanyol ended up losing that final. And yeah, it was a really sad story because they lost another final later in 2006 when they lost the final against Sevilla, I believe.
And 32 years on, they're now down in Segunda. Bayer, of course, are in this competition again this year. They're facing Rangers in the last 16 on Thursday evening. 3-1 up from the first leg in Glasgow. But then again, as they more than anybody must know, that is a dangerous scoreline after just one leg. Leverkusen, I do read, are the third favourites to win this Europa League behind Man United and Inter. Interesting stuff. Of course, they have that man Kai Havertz. If you fancy a look at a player that everybody's raving about, particularly the transfer folks at Chelsea, tune into that. Elsewhere in Thursday's action, Basel will be taking on Frankfurt, and Wolves are up against Olympiacos, a massively delicately poised game because it was 1-1 in the first leg. Meantime, there's a one-off tie in Germany, in Duisburg, as Roma take on Sevilla. Wow. James, what kind of Roma are you anticipating in this game here?
Well, a good Roma, because they finished the season very strong in Serie A. They won 7 of their last 8 games. They changed system to play with the back three, to be a little bit more solid at the back. There'll obviously be no Chris Smalling, because Smalling caught a Ryanair flight, I'm presuming from either Fiumicino or Ciampino. I think Ryanair fly from Ciampino, if memory serves. Because his loan has expired, and because Roma, literally as we speak, are in advanced talks about the takeover of the club, they could not essentially sign him on a permanent basis. But going back to that defence, it's being a lot more solid, but they're still very attacking. And Paolo Fonseca, the coach, I think has had a very good first season, even if they didn't finish in the Champions League, saying tonight that Nicolò Zaniolo will start, and Zaniolo has been excellent since his comeback from that ACL tear which he suffered in January. Really doesn't look to have affected him, and that's exciting. But of course, there's a lot of beef between Roma and Sevilla. No love lost between at least Roma's hierarchy and Monchi for the state in which they believe he left them in after they got to the Champions League semi-final a couple of years ago. So I think this should be a great game. I'm curious to hear what Alvaro makes of Sevilla's chances, because I think they also finished the season pretty well as well.
Right, 17-game unbeaten run, no, Alvaro, to finish off the campaign?
Yeah, they didn't lose any game since the lockdown, and I am a little bit surprised that the odds are better for Bayer Leverkusen than for Sevilla, to be honest. But anyway, who am I to question that? I think that Sevilla had unusual preparations for this game, unfortunately for them, because Nemanja Gudelj, one of their players, tested positive for COVID-19. So Sevilla couldn't play or couldn't train collectively till the 2nd of August. They've been doing individual training, so they couldn't prepare this game specifically very well, or as well as Julen Lopetegui would have wanted. All that said, they are a very good team. Lucas Ocampos has been sensational this season with 16 goals, but he's yet to score in the Europa League, so maybe this is like a booster for him. And generally speaking, Sevilla knows what they are doing. They play pretty much every player has memorized what Lopetegui wants, and there is a very good synchronization of the movements they are doing, and I believe that they are a team with a big chance of winning Europa League. And maybe the only shame for them is the fact that the games are going to be single ties, because I believe that this Sevilla is a team that cooks you slowly, if I may, and little by little they manage to do you. And when the game goes to 90 minutes, perhaps you cannot really show your superiority as well as you could show it in 180 minutes. All that said, and I haven't watched Roma enough, I believe that Sevilla is a very good team and a very dangerous one in this tier.
Nobody has won the Europa League or UEFA Cup more often than Sevilla. 3 times in a row, 14, 15, 16, also back in 06 and 07. What do you think? Are you tipping them for a 6th title in this competition?
I think it's going to be difficult, but I would say that Manchester United and Inter Milan look slightly more convincing because they want better players up front. And since this Europa League is going to be decided by details, I believe, rather than strategy, because the games are going to be, or the tires are going to be only 90 minutes, I will go for the teams that have better players. And I believe that Man United and Inter Milan have better players than Sevilla.
Winner of this clash on Thursday will be playing Wolves or Olympiacos in the quarterfinals next week, which, as I mentioned, incredibly delicately poised. The situation between those two after the 1-1 in Perez. We'll be talking about that game in a moment or two. James, just a quick word, though, on the subject you mentioned briefly there, the Roma takeover. That could be happening this weekend.
Yeah, could happen by the time we finish this podcast. Everything's there for it to be completed. They just need the final signatures to be made, which... is not an insignificant hurdle to leap, because ultimately this will depend on Roma's current owner, James Pelotta, agreeing to the price, the valuation that this freaking group from Texas has placed.
That's been the main. That's the name. That's not just your description or anything.
Yes. But that's been the major bone of contention, not just in the last week, but really over the last 3 or 4 months, because this takeover was practically done. It was a casualty, if you like, of the pandemic, in that it was going to go through in normal circumstances. Then COVID happened, the valuation of the club changed. The freaking group who are looking to buy the club basically said, actually, it's no longer worth what it was. So this is our valuation now. And we've got to this stage where, to be honest, it does look like it's going to happen. So very interesting. And we'll have to see whether they come back in for Chris Smalling in the event that there is a takeover.
All right. Will it be freaking in or freaking out? We'll find out in the next few days. More to come shortly, listener, as we look forward to Wolves' attempts to get into the quarterfinals. Before that, though, here's Lee Price.
Thank you. Hello. Yes, I, for one, am delighted the Europa League is back. It's a handy way of letting them know what day it is. Thursday, usually, although, of course, it doesn't quite work for Man United game, but we'll skim past that. Two of the Thursday night games look done and dusted, but the other two are on the knife edge. Wolves got that away goal in the first leg. They have the home advantage in this leg, and they are 8-11 to win this match. Olympiacos are 7-2 to beat Wolves, or another draw is 5-2. While Sevilla versus Roma, of course, is a one-leg shootout, and we make the Spaniards the favourites there. They're even money to win the match, with Roma priced at 5-2. And a quick mention of Rangers, as it's probably the last time they will be mentioned in relation to this Europa League season. They're 4-1 to beat Bayer Leverkusen, but they need to score at least 3 times, of course, which is priced at 10-1. The chances of them going through, therefore, are even more remote. Ouch. Still, at least they've got the Scottish Premiership, right?
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Wolves and Olympiacos are going at it on Thursday evening. What are the prospects for Nuno Espirito Santo's side of going through? How dangerous are the Arsenal beating Olympiacos? To find out a little more, let's hear from Tim Spears from The Athletic. Tim, 5 months on from the 1-1 draw in Piraeus, we finally get the second leg. How are Wolves looking ahead of this?
Well, I mean, they've finished seventh, which I think everybody would have taken at the start of the season. But they did slip away a bit in the final weeks of the Premier League campaign. You know, they only won two of their last six. I think they were 7 points ahead of Spurs at one point and ended up finishing behind them. And obviously, with Arsenal winning the cup, Wolves are not in Europe next season as it stands. So it's a bit of a disappointment, really. After 3 years of incredible highs, it's a rare blip for them to finish seventh, which just sounds silly, really, when you're talking about Wolves. But hey, these are the standards they've set. So they look tired to me, and I don't blame them, because they've played 57 matches this season already. They've had this great run in the Europa League, been all over the place: Armenia, Italy, Turkey, Greece. I did some number crunching the other day. They've totted up 20,000 miles in the air, and they've done it all with the smallest squad in the league. So, you know, that's great, and that's what Nuno wants, a smaller squad. But obviously, it's going to have some kind of impact on physical and mental fatigue. And yeah, they just looked a little bit tired towards the end of the season. But they've, you know, 10 days in between games. They've had 4 days off. So hopefully they'll be refreshed and obviously well up for what could be the last four games of the season with the motivation levels very high, and there's a European trophy at stake.
As you mentioned, it's been a terrific run in the competition and a valuable away goal in Perez. Raul Jimenez has been pretty key. Is there much word about his future? Is there much substance to all the talk of him being lured away?
There is general befuddlement in the corridors at Molineux as to all this kind of white noise that's emanating around the Twitter sphere, as you know, Jimenez set to leave any day now. For a start, they've got this little thing called the Europa League to finish first. I mean, he's not going anywhere yet. These links with Man United just seem very far-fetched to me. I've tried to stand them up and I can't find any substance in them. I think it'd be a strange move for Man United to spend 60, 70 million on a 29-year-old striker, you know, when they're after Jadon Sancho and maybe Grealish, and they've already got a fantastic forward line. So if the offer comes in that Wolves accept for a club like Juventus, you know, for example, who've been linked with him, then of course he'd go. But otherwise, he's very happy. You know, he painted a picture of a wolf head on his pregnant partner's belly a few weeks ago. You don't do that if you're itching for a move. I know it's not as black and white as that, but he is happy at Wolves, and he's settled and he likes it here. And the same goes for a lot of them. And they've developed, you know, a real tight community, the Portuguese and Spanish and Mexican lads that they've got here. So he is happy. And as far as I'm aware, Wolves haven't had the offer that would be enough money to take him away from the club. So this is going to go on for the next few weeks with quite a few of their players and possibly Nuno as well, which comes with the success that they've had. But as far as I know, at the moment, he's going nowhere.
Well, Olympiacos is the opposition. Of course, they're the team who sprung that huge surprise on Arsenal earlier on in this competition.
Yes, as a Greek journalist told me the other day, do not forget that. And they drew at Spurs as well in the Champions League earlier in the campaign. And they're Greek champions. They're by far the best team that Wolves have played so far. You know, Wolves haven't coasted through this competition, but they've been fine and they haven't had too many alarms. And Olympiacos, which says a bit about the standard of the competition, are, you know, by far the best team that they've played so far. And yeah, it won't be easy. You know, they only got a 1-1 draw way back in March against 10 men as well. Wolves really struggled that day. They didn't want to go to Athens. If people remember, that's just when coronavirus was really kicking off and football basically stopped a day after that tie. And the Olympiacos owner, Marinakis, had contracted coronavirus. Wolves just didn't want to go. They didn't feel safe, I would have thought, travelling to that stadium at that time. And it was the first behind-closed-doors game that they had. They really struggled with their energy and their intensity and their tempo. So I'm not sure you could read too much into that game. But yeah, Olympiacos certainly got a few dangerous players. I think Alarabi up front has got 27 goals this season, and Mathieu Valbuena is obviously a very experienced French international, and Kamara is a very good midfielder for them as well. So, but no, come on, if they want to win this competition, then yeah, they should be looking to win fairly comfortably ahead of what would be a huge quarterfinal against Sevilla or Roma.
Right, first time in Europe in 39 years.
Wow.
Could it end in glory?
Well, when lockdown ended, there was talk of Champions League football, and I thought the Europa League was always Wolves' most likely route to that, you know, given the tough competition for finishing in top four in the Premier League. I just wonder if the one game format in a neutral country just might be a bit of a leveller. But honestly, when these guys walk onto the field, they genuinely believe they can beat anybody, and they are fearless. And, you know, they have beaten everybody in England over the past couple of years. You know, they've beaten, albeit a weakened, Liverpool team in the Cup. They beat Man City a couple of times. They beat Spurs a couple of times. They beat Arsenal. They beat Man United. They can do it on their day. They've got the star power up front to trouble any team. Traore, Jota, Jimenez. And they've got a very, very good defence. So, yeah, sure, you know, why not?
Tim Spears from The Athletic. Wow. Olympiacos, of course, newly crowned Greek champions. And, well, you're there in Greece at the moment, Alvaro. What's the mood? Is the country agog ahead of this last 16 Europa League clash?
I tell you what, I've been in Thessaloniki, and since they hate Olympiacos so much, there is nothing about them. There are no kits, no colours of Olympiacos, no talks about the Europa League, nothing at all.
Okay.
Alvaro, have you not thought about walking around in an Olympiacos shirt just for the hell of it?
Yeah, I could walk with my Athletic de Bilbao shirt, and some people will may mistaken me with an Olympiacos fan, and then I may end up in the Mediterranean Sea.
All right. Well, there are worse things, Alvaro. For now, many thanks, guys, for being with us, and to Laurie and Tim for their contributions as well, and, of course, you, listener, as well. We'll catch up with you in 24 hours. See you then.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.